Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Brittany and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speaker meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And tonight I am really excited. I see this guy, worked his program. I see him at meetings. He's a great member of AA. I've never heard his story, so I'm excited. And help me welcome Alex.
What's up, everybody? I'm Alex. I'm an alcoholic and a junkie. So I was asked to do this, and it's one of those things that you know, I prayed about, and I kind of realized that I can't say no to this, right? This isn't necessarily even my story. This is definitely God's story. And so it would do God a disservice for me to just sit back and not talk about what's happened and how I came into these rooms. This isn't my first go around, but my sobriety date is February 11th, 2021. Stumbled into this place, God willing. But it took a long time to get me there. I guess growing up, I had a really good life. You know, I was the oldest of three. I got a younger brother, younger sister. We grew up in Alpharetta. Had all the friends I could ever want. But for some reason, I always felt like out of place and never really comfortable in my own skin. And I think that's a big part of my story is this. I always struggled with an identity crisis my whole life, and trying to discover or write my own story. And then finally that came to a screeching halt. But, you know, when I was about, I think it was fifth grade, I could never sit still. I was always running around getting in trouble. And a teacher suggested that I talk to a therapist, and they described me to Ritalin and Adderall and all that. And so that kind of set the precedent that, like, and I don't blame anybody for this, but it kind of set in my mind that, like, something was wrong with me. But if I take this, then I'm fixed. And that was something that went on until I was 30. That solved those problems for the time being, right? Like, all of a sudden, I went from, like, maybe a C student to an A student without even having to really put in any effort. It was just kind of natural. And everything was good until I was about 13, and I started really trying to fit in and had some curiosities about some things. Started smoking weed, drinking every chance I could get. And I remember when I was 14, that was the first of many trips to the hospital. I had to go in and get my stomach pumped, found out I had a concussion, traumatized the family for the first of, you know, there's a whole bunch of that in my story, and we'll get there. But that just kind of set the tone. Like, I was a blackout drinker from the very beginning as a kid. Like, if I was going to drink, I was going to go all the way. And I'm like that with everything. You know, it can be something good, and I'm gonna go on. And someone told me that they have their problem is that they need more, and that's definitely my problem. Like, I cannot stop. Like, if it brings any kind of gratification or pleasure or I'm gonna keep doing it. I don't know where my limit is. And then even then I can't stop. High school starts off with a bang, you know, stomach pumps, first of many concussions. And that just kind of rolls on. And I always had this complex that, like, I was different than everybody. And it was kind of the way I was raised. Like, our family, we went to church on Sunday, and no one else did. And, my parents were a little bit stricter, so I had to try a little harder to do things. And, that, you know, none of that ever stopped me from partying however I wanted to party. But, it started just a progression built up, you know, sophomore year, junior year. You know, it was like, I wasn't high before class, I wasn't going. And so that kind of came to a halt at the end of my junior year, and I got into some trouble and had to, you know, come to God, you know, the first of many with my parents. And it was like, you know, I think the problem, Alex, is the people that you're hanging out with. So why don't we switch high schools? And then that'll make the problem go away, right? And so I did. My senior year, I started fresh, switched high schools. I didn't know anybody except my brother. And it was good. I didn't use or drink the whole senior year of high school. I was totally sober. And then I went to Georgia Southern immediately after that. And that was a really bad 4 months. We got to finals, and I had been in a blackout for 4 months, literally. I didn't go to class one time. I would wake up every day, go get a lot of beer, sit at the pool, and then go to the bars. And that was my life down there. And I called my dad come finals time, and I was like, "Yo, this is really bad. Like, you need to come get me. This is out of control." And so he did, and I dropped out of school and started over again. And I was sober for until March of the next year. I didn't drink, I didn't use, I didn't do anything. I started working at a car dealership, made some money, and then decided I should go on spring break with people from Georgia Southern. And that first night, it was horrible. I remember the last thing I remember is I'm funneling margaritas on the beach, and then I wake up the next day in a bathtub, butt naked. And that was a bad week. So that's kind of how things went for a little while. You know, just a lot of, I just thought I was partying. You know, I thought I was partying like everybody else, and I was delusional to the fact that my partying went a little bit stronger than everybody else's. Like, mine always carried on to the next day and then the next day, and you know, I never took a break. But then I got a girlfriend, and she was good. I was 19, and we ended up staying together for almost 7 years, and she was progressing in life, and I was, like, spiraling. So where it gets kind of hard to talk about, it's when I was about 23, that's when I started having health issues. So I developed what I later found out was a really rare syndrome that, like, one in a million maybe get this, and it's called cannabinoid hypermesis syndrome. And basically, your brain starts to read THC levels as a toxin when they get to a certain point, and your body just goes into purge mode. And, you know, I would get this, it would normally happen a night after partying, but also because all the weed I was smoking. And I would start throwing up, and it wouldn't stop. Sometimes it would last 12 hours. Sometimes it would last 7 or 8 days, and it was, like, nonstop, violently throwing up. And so I'd have to go to the hospital. And that, you know, that was miserable, you know. And when I was about 24, my mom was like, you know, I read an article, Alex, and it's saying that this is happening because of this. And, like, I kind of knew, but I was in such denial that I was like, nah, that can't be it. And I had gastroenterologists and doctors and surgeons, like, working on me, and they were like, you know, smoking weed helps nausea, smoke weed. And I was like, I'm sold, you know. But there was times when it got really, really bad. And when I was 24, I was admitted into the hospital from the ER 13 times that year. And there were times where, like, my liver and my kidneys were shutting down. I was jaundiced, bilirubin through the roof. I got my gallbladder removed at one point. And there was times where, like, my vitals were so low that there was a lot of prayer that I wouldn't die in the middle of the night. And that happened time and time again. And the cycle was really sick in that, like, I would get a little bit better, get out of the hospital, and go right back to the thing that I was doing that put me into the hospital. When I was 25, I could not stop drinking and partying, and it was out of hand, and I had ulcers just all through my body. And at one point, I remember I got home from the hospital, and I was taking a shower, and I just collapsed with this pain in my side, and rushed back to the hospital, and they did all these CAT scans and MRIs, and they found out that I had a hole in my colon, pretty significant hole. And so this was like one of the first times that God really showed up in my story. I was scheduled for a surgery at 6 a.m. the next morning to get a colostomy bag, and I would have to wear it for the rest of my life. And my whole family came around, and they laid hands and prayed on me. And the next morning, I get in to go to surgery, and the hole is gone. Like, it just healed overnight. And the surgeon's like, you know, I've never seen this before. This is an actual miracle. He's like, but you need to stop drinking. And I was like, bet. I was like, I'll take 6 weeks off. And I did. And I made it 6 weeks sober. I didn't do anything. And then that Friday night, when 6 weeks hit, I put myself back in the hospital. Alcohol poisoning. And it was really sick, and I started to realize that there was a problem there. I couldn't quit. Like, the physical consequences were excruciating. Like, I remember the first time that I went to the doctor with this sickness happening, he was like, Alex, you need to tell me what kind of opiate you're coming off of, because he thought I was going into withdrawals just from the sickness. And, you know, when I was in the hospital, the one thing that would really help and ease the suffering was when they would give me that little push button with morphine. And that kind of stuck with me for a long time. And I just had that in my back pocket. I started going back to school at Georgia State when I was like 21. And I just felt behind and older than some of the other people. But I was getting a history degree. It was pretty easy. You know, it was like I could knock out a paper in one night with some, you know, my Adderall and help of some other stuff. And that started to become more and more frequent as well at that point. And then when I was 25, I was just about to graduate. And I just went through this period of just binge after binge of partying. And I got so sick that I ended up back in the hospital for like, it was like 9 days or something like that. And I ended up having to do a medical withdrawal from Georgia State. I had 13 hours left until I was going to graduate, and I never went back. I've been told that might be something I do at some point, but I don't know. We're not there yet. When I was 26, I had been dating a girl for 7 years, and my family had an intervention with her that she needed to leave me because I was just dragging her down through the mud. I mean, my life was a spiral, and everything in my world was about me. I was really smooth at manipulating people back to, you know, feel sorry for me, and I really played off that illness that I had. And then I met with a psychiatrist who understood addiction, and he understood the brain, and he had heard of this syndrome before, and he'd actually done research on it in California. And so he took my levels of THC, and he was like, Alex, this is insane. Like, this is literally, he showed me the chart, and like, it was still going up, and the chart stopped. Like, there was no, I mean, it was off the charts, literally. And so I knew at that point why I was getting so sick, with like definitive evidence, and I still couldn't stop doing what I was doing. And through that, you know, I started getting really bad anxiety. Like, anytime I would feel something in my stomach, I would just like have like these little panic attacks. So that was like a perfect opportunity to get prescribed to dissolvable Ativan and Xanax bars, which, you know, I took for 8 years. You know, I had as many as I could ever want. And that's, man, that was tough getting off of that, but we'll get there. This just progresses, and I drop out of school again. I can't really work because I'm just always so sick. So I have a buddy of mine who was doing some home remodeling, and he said, why don't you come to work with me? You can work when you can. You'll learn a lot. You'll have a tool belt on every day. We're going to jack up floor systems and do all the stuff. And I loved it. You know, I fell in love with it. And I was still getting sick all the time. I was partying like a psycho. But on the surface, like, if you just, like, knew me, you wouldn't know, like, the depths of my suffering, because I just, like, played it off like everything was fine, always. Like, I was never honest about what was going on, what I was going through, the misery and the suffering and the trauma that I had put everybody else through. I never acknowledged it. I never acknowledged what I was doing to other people, because it was all about me. And then, so that went on for about 2 years. And then when I was 26, I met my boss, who I'm still with today, and started from the ground up building houses for a guy. And with the job, like, that came more money, And with more money, it really took things to another level. I had moved back home after me and my girlfriend broke up. So now I'm 26 living at home. That lasted about 6 months, and I got my own place again. And I thought that was freedom, right? And I was so delusional. Like that house I had, it was a prison. You know, I would work just enough to get, you know, like everything was fine. I'd get my money, and then I'd lock myself in my house and just do a lethal combination of things. And, you know, by that point, you know, I was drinking. I never drank every day, but I would drink every weekend throughout the whole weekend and a couple nights during the week. And you know, bad stuff didn't happen every time I drank, but every time something bad happened, I was drinking. And that's the realization I had coming into these rooms. But other stuff really came into play at that point. You know, I was still, I had a dependency on benzos. Cocaine was making its way into the work week. And I was still getting just unbelievably sick all the time. And I kind of stopped going to the hospital because I didn't want everyone to know how sick I was. So I would just hide it and just lock myself in my house and lay in a hot shower until I'd run out of hot water. And then I'd let it get hot again. And that would go on for days. And then, you know, 28, 29, same thing. It just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And then I turn 30, and my 30th birthday is, it's just miserable. By that point, I found dope. And, you know, I was so egotistical and so insane that I thought that it won't happen to me. I was like, I'm not going to get hooked on this because I'm different than everybody else. It's like, I'm not going to shoot it. I'm going to snort it. I'm going to smoke it. And I'm going to be fine. I'm going to manage this. Never met anybody who could manage that. It's not possible. So yeah, I have a heroin addiction on my books, and things got really, really bad. That last year was it was really bad, and it was really expensive. By the time I was 30, and I basically was like, I thought I was managing my life because I still had this job and I still had, you know, my truck, and I didn't look like some other, you know, what I thought in my head an alcoholic junkie looked like. But in reality, like, I wouldn't have known, because for about 6 months when I would brush my teeth in the morning, I would turn around and face the shower because I couldn't look at myself in the mirror, right? By that point, I wasn't able to see my family because I couldn't bear them seeing me like that. I couldn't, like, there was so much shame over me that I couldn't face anybody. Like, I was hiding from the world, and I was completely alone. So I turned 30, and I just had the most depressing 30th birthday. I can't even talk about it because it was disgusting. And so about 3 months after that, I turned 30 in January. In March of 2018, I pretty much run that course all the way out, right? I got really sick. And I showed up at mom and dad's house, and I just said, look, this is what's going on. I'm about to die. I need help. I ended up staying in their house for 5 days, 6 days of zero sleep, going through withdrawals, cold turkey withdrawals, detox from everything that I had been doing. And I laid in the shower for 6 days straight, didn't sleep, had a couple seizures. It was really, really bad. But then Sunday came. And my dad was going to church, and I just thought, like, something came over me, and it was like, just show up. And that was a God thing for sure, because the way this pans out, it couldn't have been not from him. I remember sitting in church, and I'm just, like, white-knuckling it, pouring sweat, like, you know how what happens. And I feel like it's like a one-on-one talk with me and the preacher. And he's like, basically, if you still have breath in your lungs, then there's still purpose in your life. And that kind of hit me. And so after that, I ran back into this little access space where you can meet people and they pray with you. And I met this guy, and just so happened he had 9 years sober. And he was very straightforward with me. I remember telling him, look, man, I don't see light at the end of the tunnel. And he said, well, it's because you're going down the wrong tunnel. You need to back up and find another one. And he was like, you need to go to rehab. And I was like, let me pray about it. He's like, no, that's bullshit. He's like, you need to go, I'm telling you. And so I did. Two days later, I checked into rehab. And once I got into rehab, I didn't sleep for another 5 days. So I went 11 days with zero sleep. I was going through psychosis. And then once I did finally sleep, I was having these demonic nightmares of, like, they were just horrible. But rehab was great. You know, I got reconnected with God. I had some spiritual experiences, and I thought that I was good. You know, like I thought, like, all right, well, I got God in my back pocket now, so let's do life. And I came out. I was fired up about some stuff. I tried coming into the rooms. I didn't get a sponsor. I told people I had a sponsor. I didn't work a single step. I was still running on my will. There was things that I was holding on to that I wasn't ready to let go. And so when life happened, I started smoking pot again after about 8 months, and I didn't tell anybody. And I was just, everyone thought I was sober. They told my story at the church, and they said, here's Alex, he's healthy and sober. And I was sitting there going, no, I'm not, but I'm going to pretend like I am. And that shame was, oh my God, it was so bad. It was so miserable. So I smoked pot another 2 years, started getting sick again. And that rolls into, now I'm at Christmas of 2020, and I get a really nice bonus check from my boss, and it's like $5,000, and I end up cashing it and spending all of it on nitrous in the month of January. $5,000, and I just lock myself in my house, and cause I'm so miserable, and I'm so alone, and I'm so depressed and suicidal that I just had to knock myself out, and I was terrified to drink because at rehab we had a family day where I sat in a circle of my whole family, and they all read these letters that they wrote, and every single one of them, their letters talked about my drinking. Not one of them had anything to do with drugs or anything. It was, when you drink, this happens, and it's terrifying. And so, like, that scared me from alcohol. I mean, I'm to this day, I'm terrified to drink because I don't know what's going to happen. So, yeah, I ended up having that nitrous bender in February, what is it? Yeah, February 9th of 2021. By this point, I have some tickets that I never paid because I didn't have to deal with that kind of stuff. I'm special. My license gets suspended. My insurance finds out. They drop me. And so I'm driving on my parents' street in the middle of a work day. It's like 11 o'clock on a Friday morning, and I get pulled over on my parents' street, and there's like 10 Brookhaven police. They think my truck's stolen for whatever reason. There's a whole scene. I ended up going down to the cab, and I had to sit there for, you know, over a day, and I'm just going through withdrawals. I'm miserable. I have sciatica acting up. I couldn't sit. I couldn't stand. I couldn't lean. It was just horrible, but I felt in that moment that God was like, you know, I've got you. Like, this is not the end of your story. And it was very clear that when I got out of there that I had to come up with a plan of action. So I got out of there, and my parents had a friend over that night. I got home, and he's also in recovery. And he said, so what are you going to do different this time? I was like, well, I'm going to go to some meetings and do this and that. He goes, no, that's bullshit. He said, what are you going to do? Where's your plan of action? Why haven't you written it down yet? I'm like, well, dude, I just got out of jail. He was like, well, get to work on writing. So that night, I sat down and prayed, and I came up with a list of things that I was going to do. And till this day, I still do all these things. But the first one was I was going to come back to NABA, and I was going to come in these doors in the middle of a pandemic. And I did. The first meeting I came to was the Sunday night meeting, 8 o'clock. And that was great. The next day, I came back, and I found myself in the 1:30. And at this point, you know, I'm so broken and so miserably lonely and just, like, sad that you know, I couldn't even open my mouth without crying. And after the meeting, some people, I mean, who were in this room, you know, came up to me and they said, look, you're going to be okay. And for whatever reason, I believed them. And they talked to me at that point. You know, my brother, who was my best friend, he wanted nothing to do with me. I wasn't allowed to see my niece. My sister hated me. My parents still had some hope, so I moved back in with them for 90 days, and I just kept coming back. I mean, I lived here. I still went to work every day, but I came back to this place every chance I could. I was in these rooms, and just making my face known, and not one bit of that was comfortable, right? Like, this whole thing about getting to know people and interjecting into circles outside the clubhouse is awkward, but it's so important. Like, it has saved my life. Just getting to know you guys. So, you know, I just really started praying for community and fellowship, and God has shown up in a real way. I mean, He's blessed me with fellowship and community and accountability and support in ways that I couldn't imagine. But one of the biggest things I kept hearing in here was that you need a sponsor. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. I'm willing. So I got a sponsor. We lasted about 2 months. He left me hanging on a fourth step. And so I got another sponsor. He was great. It was I prayed about it for 2 days. 2 days later, I meet this guy, and we go through the steps, and it was, man, it was beautiful. It was an experience I'll never forget. I remember the first step, he said, I want you to write down 10 ways your life's unmanageable. All right, I started writing, and by the time I was done, I had 10 pages. It was overwhelmingly obvious that I could not manage my own life. And he was great. It was special. But I kept hearing about service, and so I heard about this homeless outreach. And I had 5 days sober at the time, and I was like, I can help somebody, you know. It's crazy, but so I went out and did the homeless outreach, and I fell in love with it. You know, pouring out to other people, it does more for me than it was like filling a void that I tried to fill with every substance under the sun and anything from this world. Like I tried to fill this hole, and pouring out to other people finally filled that, and I felt purpose for the first time and real fulfillment. And I just started doing that every week. I just said Thursday nights are for going out and helping people, regardless of how much time I have. If I don't know anything. I don't know how to get sober or stay sober, but I'm going to go out and pour into people who might have it worse off than I am. And, it changed my life. It changed my perspective on life. And, you know, I've had, before coming back into the rooms this time, I've had spiritual experiences, like overwhelming spiritual experiences where I was almost manic. And the spiritual experience I've had this time was not anything like that. It was a slow process of my perspective being changed from God being this tool that I can put in my back pocket to me understanding that, like, God's not just a little part of my story, but, like, I'm a part of His story. And it's really cool to see. So, yeah, I've got a couple other groups that I'm a part of. I've started meeting with them once a week. I'm in meetings at this point. You know, I don't know how many meetings I did in 90 days. It was a lot. And I met a lot of good people in here. I started connecting with people who I call, you know, today people in these rooms are family to me. You know, I went from having nobody to having just an overwhelming amount of people that love and support me, to the point where if I don't show up for a meeting for a few days, there's about 4 people that are calling me and they're saying, where are you at? How are you doing? Talk to me. And the fact that I am willing to talk to people today is an act of God. That being beaten to a pulp made me vulnerable, right? Like it takes what it takes in here. Like we all, I know that for certainty that, but I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful for what it took, you know, because I'm here, and I've got almost 15 months sober, and that's something I haven't been able to say since I was 12. So yeah, I get my second sponsor. We go through the steps. I had this great experience, and I love talking about the fifth step, because the fourth step was really hard, right? Like there were so many things in my life that I just pretended like it never happened. Like, I had this unbelievable ability to just block out truth and just go about things like it didn't happen. We're just going to roll on. So I had to sit down and really process that stuff. And when I broke it all down, a lot of my inventory was based in fear and not knowing who I was and trying to be perceived as this guy that I'm not. Like, I kept trying to write my own story my whole life. And in reality, it had already been written for me. I just ran from that. But then when I talked about my fifth step to my sponsor, didn't feel like anything happened. And then I get in my truck to drive home, and it felt like I was floating. I mean, like, literally, it felt like I was driving a big, long boat on 400 back to my house. It was crazy. It felt like this weight that I had been carrying around. I mean, some of the stuff that I was not going to talk to anybody about, I mean, it was stuff that I'd been carrying around for 10, 15 years, and I buried it down to my knees. And just being willing to talk about that stuff, is there's real freedom there. And I can't talk about that enough. I mean, just the power and vulnerability in sharing my experiences with another man was that was like nothing I've ever experienced. You know, I've had the therapist, I've had the counselor since I was a kid. I mean, there's been dozens of them. And I would tell them what's up, and they would look at me like, wow, like you are crazy. Or they would call me an alcoholic, and then I would say, no, I'm not, and I'd leave and never talk to them again, get a new counselor, and never really fully open up, because I just knew they wouldn't understand. But when I came in here, you guys just got it, you know? It was like my whole life, I had been hiding things and putting on this facade. And I came in here, and I didn't have to do that anymore. And that was just such a breath of fresh air, just to be who I am and not get told to get out of here. I worked the steps with that sponsor. It was great. And then I started getting on into some, like, life issues, like, you know, how to manage money, job stuff, and all that, and I just needed somebody new, and so I prayed about it, and I got my third sponsor. He's great. He helps me with day-to-day things. It's somebody that asks me a lot of questions, you know, and helps me come to answers like that, and that's great for me. But it's just nice to have somebody that you can sit down with and put everything on the table. And there's freedom there. You know, there's real freedom there. And it's freedom that I've never experienced before. My life today, you know, it looks, if you would have told me just 2 years ago that I would look forward to Thursday nights going out into the streets of downtown Atlanta, wandering under bridges to tent cities and pouring out to others, I would have said, "Get out, get away from me! Like you, this is foolish." And God has changed the desires of my heart. He's brought purpose and a fullness that can't come from this world, and given my life new meaning, you know. And it's just a testament to this program. And one of the things I love most about this program is that it keeps me connected with God. You know, like I've had God before, and I went back out and drank. But working these steps every day keep me in that conscious contact. And there's things that I have to do every day that keep God in the the center of my life. Like, yeah, the program's in the center, but the point of that is to keep God in the center for me. And it's been amazing. You know, I can't put into words the life that this room in particular has given me. This is the room that I got sober in. It's that right over there. I cried every day. And no one told me to suck it up. You know, that was like my whole life. I was told, man up, deal with it, figure it out. You know, I've been a problem solver. I build houses. I fix problems. But this was not something that I could figure out. Like, we had to figure this out. And, you know, that whole man-up mentality, it doesn't work for getting sober for me. Like, really manning up, I've come to realize, was me swallowing my pride and asking another man for help. And thank God that it came to that, you know, because I wouldn't be here today if that willingness didn't come over me to sit down and say that I was broken and lonely and hated myself. But there's freedom there. So, yeah, I stay in these rooms, you know. I come here as much as I can. I come here when I don't want to. I talk to people when I don't want to. I pick up the phone. I've got friends in here that you know, we go on trips together. We hang out. We go to dinner. We, you know, like, people that I run with are people that are doing the deal. And that's been huge. You know, you can't speak highly enough about the fellowship in these rooms. It's something that I never thought I was worthy of. Cause I've always, you know, I always had all the friends, but I was always a loner at heart. Because I was just so uncomfortable in my own skin. And, you know, coming in here, I have found who I am, and it's better than anything I could have made up myself, because I tried that for a long time, and it landed me in the hospital, in jail, totaling vehicles, broken relationships, PTSD, trauma, missing organs, you name it, you know, like my will has brought me there. And so turning this over to God has been, it's just fascinating. Like the surrender to win is just, man, like, are you kidding me? You mean just to give up and my life will get better? Like it took a long time for me to wrap my head around that, you know? Thank God I did. And thank God for people in these rooms that are, take the time to walk me through this, and they don't want anything in return other than to see me get better and for them to stay sober. You know, I mean, these rooms have given me a relationship. It's given me best friends. It's, you know, this is my family now. So yeah, I at this point, you know, I'm afraid to not do what I'm doing, you know, because it works. It works. And there's some people who don't get it, and they're like, you're still going to that place? You're still going to these meetings and doing that? And I'm like, yeah, because I don't want to kill myself today. You know, I haven't been in the hospital in a year and a half. My brother talks to me. I can go see my niece whenever I want to. My sister's my friend again. You know, I can show up at my parents' house. They ask me to keep their dog when they go out of town. I'm allowed to go to the beach house. I'm allowed to take friends down to the family beach house because of this program. I tried for a long time to not use and drink like I did. And I tried everything. Switching locations, switching friend circles, managing drinking and different combinations of substances. I go all out every time in everything I do. I go all out, whether, you know, it's good for me, bad for me. If it feels good, I'm going to do it. And this is something that I'm so glad that I came in here and I was broken enough to sit down and listen, you know, because if you're not there yet, it's hard to do this thing. If you still think you know something, it's hard to grab this. I'm grateful, you know, at this point, you know, all the suffering and all the stuff I've been through, I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm seeing God use all that pain and suffering for good. All that pain is now my platform to help other people, right? Every hospital visit, every total truck, not one bit of that is in vain. It's all being used for good. And that's special. That's a miracle. This program has given me life. It's given me freedom, and I'm just really grateful to be here. It blows my mind that, you know, someone like me and someone who's done the things that I could do would be asked to come up here and tell their story. And that's just, if I can do it, then anybody in this room can do it if you're willing. So that's about all I got. Thanks for letting me share. Woo!
Thanks for sharing some of your life with us, Alex. That was awesome.
Strange to me, as I rode from town to town, can't put the bottle down, right now feels like it's killing me, life out here gets so depressing, need something to take the edge, you see. Nowhere to hide, an empty hole inside. the Bible, the book, or the gun for me. Seems like everyone's out to get me. Trouble always following me. Feeling like I just can't outrun. Demons that are all around me. Girl.